the OTB Podcast Network.
David Moyler, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, lads.
Look, before we talk about the Champions League, you played in midfield for the Republic of Ireland and Alan McLaughlin passed away, sadly, yesterday. It's one of those moments that I think makes all of us feel a little bit old, where somebody from that legendary team that qualified for two World Cups, and particularly that moment that he created in Irish sport, has passed away so, so young. What are your recollections of the goal? And did you ever get to meet Alan McLaughlin? Was there ever any opportunity to talk to him?
No, unfortunately, I never met Alan. Obviously, look, the goal against Northern Ireland in Windsor Park is spoken about. I would have been, it was obviously 93, I'd have been 4 at the time, so I don't have much recollection of it. Saw clips of it over the years, of course, because it's the famous and it's an iconic moment. But anyone like you've listened to or heard speaking about him in the last few days has spoke really highly about the person he was. We all know he was a very good footballer, but it's always interesting to hear the, you know, this kind of family side to him. And, you know, obviously everybody's speaking really highly of him, and, you know, he was a great footballing man, and it is a tragic loss. You know, someone at that age who, and everybody was only playing 28, 29 years ago, to think, you know, he's lost his life. And, you know, my thoughts do go to his family.
40 odd caps at a time when Jack Charlton would pick Paul McGrath in midfield, and you had Townsend, and you had Ronnie Whelan, and a bunch of others at that stage as well. So that kind of speaks to his talent as well.
No, 100%. Like, you look at the midfielders you just listed out there, like, and then of course you have a young Roy Keane coming through at that time too. So it was very difficult. And certainly back then, it wasn't, you know, they didn't play as many games as we did, like, as we do now. So that tells you the testament of the player he was. He was a fantastic servant to Ireland, you know, to receive that amount of caps. But it just goes down to show, like, oh, it was very tough, but he stuck in there. He got his caps. He turned up whenever it was required. He performed when he needed to. And it is a big loss for Irish football.
Yeah, no, for sure. Let's talk about Manchester City last night. They did exactly what they needed to do. And it's the type of managing of a game that this Pep team has not been able to do in Champions Leagues in previous years. So what's different this time about this City team?
I think they were just so resilient last night in their performance. You know, they obviously sat down. I think they would have reflected on, say, last year's campaign, certainly losing to Lyon, where we all remember he adjusted his tactics and we kind of said, what are you doing? We kind of realised that after. And last night, certainly, they just narrowed off through the middle. You know, the back four were tight, the midfielders. You looked at even the front three. I've never seen Riyad Mahrez work so hard. Everything about them, they just frustrated the living daylights out of, you know, PSG. Like, Neymar had nowhere to go at times. He was trying to dribble, but he'd no space to get into any time. Then he was afforded some bit of space. Like, all four defenders turned up with blocks, tackles, everything. They were really... The thing that probably took me the most was how they were just so resilient in their terms of defending, and how they stuck together. You know, every man did his job fantastically well. And of course, when the opportunities arose, you know, they took their goals superbly well.
I'm not sure, did you ever play against Fernandinho? But he seems like an absolute nuisance when he's in that sort of form.
Yeah, I have played against him several times, yeah. You forget he's been in the Premier League a long time. but what a player. Like, to turn 36 yesterday and put in a performance like that, like, he has mastered, you know, the dark arts and, like, his little fouling all the time. But he never picks up yellow cards. Of course, we've seen it in different games where he has, unfortunately, picked them up. I think the Premier League have probably copped onto him a little bit more. But it's sly little trips here and there. But as a player, his reading of the game is just exceptional. The little pockets where he picks up to, you know, make block after block, whether it be, like, you know, cutting passes off or just stopping the run of some player. And then, of course, look, on the ball, he's an exceptionally gifted passer of it. Like, for any young midfielder watching that last night, he's certainly, like, a holding midfielder. You could learn so much from him.
How does he get away with it so often when it comes to the ill... it's not ill-discipline because he's not getting punished for it.
Shithousery.
Yeah, OK, it's shithousery.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it, sure. Does help him is he has got the armband on his arm, so he'll get the little rub of the green off the referees there for that. If you look at, say, PSG late on, you know, when they lost the rag and they lost their heads and they were fouling, you look at the types of fouls they're making. They're wild, they're reckless. is there always little kind of bumps and their little, you know, toe pokes at somebody just to like clip their ankles, almost like, you know, like he's tripping them up, but it's not cynical. And it's like, he'll pick the player up and it's kind of like, he'll put his hands out and kind of go, okay, there's no kind of arguing. If you remember, was it Andorra and Bernardo Silva, where there's a big faff with Fernandinho, there's not much of that. He doesn't get involved in those, you know, childish little games where there's no needless yellow cards picked up. And he's just, he's a master at upsetting the rhythm of like these types of players, like your Neymars, your Di Marias. Like even if you go as far as, you know, the sending off for Di Maria, like I remember I was sitting down watching with my wife and I said, there's a bit of Brazil and Argentina there, you know, like a little bit of rivalry, but it's just, he gets in his head for that split second where, you know, Di Maria lashes out. And it's just that, it's that knowledge and know-how of how to, you know, wind a little, you know, wind someone up, get them to react. And he is superb at it. But those players, like the PSG ones, you've got to know better. Like they're all international players, been in Europe a long time. Like you can't be falling for little mind games like those.
Have you seen that happen before? That a team just collectively loses their head so convincingly? Like Neymar seemed like the level-headed guy on the pitch last night, which is really saying something.
Hey, you see it a lot, really. Like they would have felt that they were still in the game, of course. Look, the loss of Mbappe is massive. Certainly when, you know, I listened to Verratti speak after, Herrera after, they kind of spoke about like they dominated the game, they were the better side, they had more possession. They never created much. Of course, okay, look, Marquinhos hit the bar, Di Maria had that chance. They never really created clean-cut chances where you thought, like, oh, they've got to score here, they've got to score there. You know, they would have felt always in the game, but inevitably they weren't going anywhere. They weren't doing much. Like City, like, Pep had obviously sat down and worked this out, like, how do we stop them? And then he had, look, the Man City players, 1-14 with the subs that came on, were all drilled. It was just an exquisite display from them.
Like Zinchenko, Diaz, Stones were all like Richard Dunn in Moscow that night. They were all unbelievable. Like it's, and it seems that they're just getting such a buzz off every single block that they make, and the collective energy that they're giving each other after each block.
But there was a great instance in the second half. I don't know if you remember, Gundogan had the ball in the middle of midfield. He played a couple of passes and he turned out to come out to the right-hand side where you'd expect Riyad Mahrez to be, obviously looking to get in behind, so you push their left back, and Kyle Walker would bomb up the field. Kyle Walker never came forward. And there was a moan. He turned and the hands came up in the air and was kind of like, come on, get up. Like, and then Gundogan obviously turned back inside because he had no pass on. He ended up losing possession. But it was fascinating to look at because you'd expect, you know, City with their fullbacks bombing on, but they were just quite content in saying, we're like, the back four had a job to do. And you spoke obviously about Zinchenko, Diaz and Stones, the numbers of blocks, tackles, etc. they made. But they didn't commit too much space in behind. They know the danger of PSG. And it was a tactical master plan and they all nailed it to a T. And then, of course, look, in moments where PSG are going to break it down, Stones, Diaz, block after block. Like, it was just an incredible team performance with every player playing to the maximum of their capability.
Those fullbacks not really pushing on outrageously last night. Was that kind of similar to how they started the first leg as well? But maybe on this occasion, just PSG weren't at the races compared to how they were maybe at the start of the first leg.
Well, it's always very difficult. You know, you play at home and play away. Of course, look, I know PSG have a fantastic away record. I think they've only lost one game since January going into that. So, you know, of course, as well, when I highlight the fullbacks not getting forward, somebody would be quick to say, well, Ederson's a long ball over the top to Zinchenko. Of course, but that's the way, you know, the team had slotted around in that position, which afforded Zinchenko to get forward at that time. But PSG started, obviously, very brightly in the first leg. Look, Pep learned from it. I imagine the Man City players learned from it. They would have looked back, they would have watched the game. Where could we nullify the space? Neymar had, you know, ran them ragged first half an hour of that game. You think about what did he do last night? He couldn't really make anything happen. Anytime he got the ball, he was on the other side of, you know, Manchester City's midfield, where that's where you want Neymar, where he has to beat your midfield, and then he has to get to, you know, once he, if he gets past them, he has to get past the defenders, which is very, very difficult. As exceptional as he is, it just frustrated the life out of a lot of them, where they couldn't do much and they couldn't get into the game.
Is there a case to be made for Ederson as Manchester City's Footballer of the Year? Jonathan Norcroft is making that point in the Sunday Times.
Oh, well. No. how can you say that with the performances of Gundogan,
yeah,
Kevin De Bruyne, Phil Foden? Of course, look, Ederson's range of passing, it's not normal. Keepers, like, not only keepers, but a lot of midfield players, defenders can't. Passes, his pinpoint passing is exceptional. Like, he's dropped that with one step onto, you know, Zinchenko's toe, in like putting him through into a dangerous area. That doesn't, like, that's a good 60, 70 yard pinpoint pass. Okay, look, he's getting a bit carried away with, you know, footballer. You know, there's certainly other players that will be ahead of him.
Can we talk about the evolution of Mahrez as somebody and the general kind of point where we get to now in his career? It was obviously brilliant for Leicester when they won the league, but he never really felt like, well, I wasn't sure if it was going to go on and become a career at that level. And even when he got to City, it was kind of in and out a bit. He'd be in for a period of time, there'd be a streak, he'd come back out. And it always felt like Sterling was a good bit ahead of him. Now Sterling isn't, and obviously Foden is the direct replacement for Sterling, but there was a mix there, or it felt like they'd invested so much in Gabriel Jesus that he would ultimately be ahead of him. And even before that, Leroy Sané was like, well, you know, he's not going to get in the team for a long, sustained period of time. And yet, as you said, you've never seen him work harder. That's the coaching bit that maybe we take for granted when it comes to Guardiola, that his ability to inspire players to get beyond what we thought they were capable of, while at the same time still being the best version of themselves.
No, definitely. I think Riyad Mahrez is a great example. If you ever look at any of the interviews the Leicester players do, you know, and they have those cheap questions like who's always late, and it's always like they always laugh, or who's getting fined the most, it's always Riyad Mahrez. I think there was probably an ill discipline off the pitch where, you know, Ranieri probably let him get away with a lot because he would perform week in, week out. I remember listening to Danny Drinkwater talk one time, and nearly the team talk before any Leicester game was like, Riyad, if you fancy it, like, we'll win the game. And if you look back to a lot of those games, he was the main man. Going then to City, where, like you said, they do have a whole host of world-class players that, you know, he's probably not been the main man, and he's had to be, you know, he's been rotated, and he's probably been frustrated, where it's probably cost him off the field in terms of, you know, his discipline, maybe of turning up the time on training. And I think probably the penny has dropped with various different conversations he's, you know, had with Guardiola, that Guardiola's like, look, you have the ability, listen to me, you need to work this bit harder doing X, Y, and Z, and I'll take you to the next level. Because I'm like, look, if Pep Guardiola calls you into his office, sits down and says, look, I need this, this, and this from you, you're going to listen, you're going to take note because of what he's achieved in the game, the players he's worked with. And I certainly think Mahrez is a prime example of someone who has listened over time, rather than if the penny had dropped maybe 2 years ago, we would have seen this impact that he's having, you know, this season earlier. Certainly, look, he's an exceptional footballer. He's a great gift in being one of those players that can beat someone 1v1 in tight areas. He's very comfortable dribbling. Like, he's predominantly left foot, but look at the amount of times you see him coming on his left, cut back onto his right, and he can create something. He's an exceptional player with, you know, bundles of talent.
I know the second goal last night's a tap-in, but it's a lung-busting run where you're in the defensive set and all of a sudden you realise that two quick passes from Kevin De Bruyne, and if you just make that far post, Phil Foden's going to put it on a plate for you. Like, it, you know, it seems easy. It seems really easy because there's literally one touch and it's in the back of the net, but you've got to make that run a lot in those games. And mostly, you don't end up with a tap-in at the far post. But having the confidence in your teammates, that's just a sign of a team playing really well together and a certain amount of confidence. The question coming out of that is, though, who do you want in a one-off game in the final? Do you want a Chelsea team who know you intimately? Or do you want a Real Madrid side who will feel that actually, because they're Real Madrid, you might be underdogs? What do you want?
You know, I was asked this, and, you know, everyone now is tip City kind of to win it, and obviously the next semi-finals tonight, and you kind of go Chelsea, Real, what do you fancy? Real just know the Champions League. They know how to win it. Of course, look, they had great success under Zidane. We know that. I know they don't have Ronaldo anymore, but they just know how to win games in the Champions League. They'll be going in thinking this is just another one for us. City, on the other hand, could look at Chelsea. Like you said, Chelsea know us intimately. Likewise, do City know Chelsea intimately? I think it would be a fitting one for Pep, thinking like, you know, if we got Chelsea, they knocked them out in the FA Cup, that there'd be kind of a bit of revenge. I think Pep got his team wrong that night. He should have played his, or that, whenever they played Chelsea, I think it was 5 o'clock, but he should have played his strongest 11. That side we saw last night, because it was Leicester v Southampton, you know, of course, he has an exceptional squad. It's a very difficult one. Either team are going to be up for it. I think you probably want Chelsea more than you'd want Real Madrid. That's just my kind of gut feeling, thinking, you know, Real Madrid just know what the Champions League is about. You know, those players would be comfortable being in that situation of playing in a Champions League final. You know, I know they have some young and upcoming talent in that squad as well, but a lot of them, like your Ramoses, Benzemas, Cruz, Modric, they've all been there. They're all tried and tested. They've won several Champions Leagues. So it's not going to feel any different to them. Of course, Manchester City, we've seen the scenes last night after the final whistle went, how excited they are. But it's like, hold on a minute. Like, yes, it's fantastic to be in the final, but you've not won it yet. You don't want to come this far. And Joe Hart, of course, was on BT speaking about like this club is gone through so much with the highs and lows. But this is a team that wants to be winning Champions League finals, not just getting there. So if I was to pick one or the other, I'd probably prefer, if I was a Manchester City player, to play Chelsea over Real Madrid.
And there's also kind of a revenge mission element to it after the FA Cup semi-final. And what we've seen over the last week, Pep Guardiola, when he's got a bit of information on a team, he tends to do pretty well with that information.
No, definitely. Look, I think with the Chelsea game, I think he got his team selection wrong. I can't believe I'm even saying that, like that I'm saying about Pep Guardiola getting it wrong. But if you look at it kind of, you know, Ferran Torres, Sterling played or whatever, and they were just, you could see that they weren't kind of, you know, that match speed of kind of playing week in, week out, or playing a lot of regular football. I think Sterling's been very hot and cold this season. If you had played, you know, Riyad Mahrez, etc., would have been totally different. So I think if they did get Chelsea, then he would definitely obviously play strongest 11. I think they would be too good for Chelsea.
Their winning run now is the longest run by any team by any English team, I should say, in the history of the European Cup or the Champions League. It's 7 consecutive wins at this point. The question will still remain about whether or not this is the best Manchester City team of this era. There will be people who will cling to the notion of Kompany and Silva and Aguero at their peak as a team that can never be usurped. But this team, surely, David, if they win this Champions League, have to be the best Manchester City team of all time.
No, they have to be. You're right, because you don't win the Champions League by not being, you know, the best team in Europe. Of course, look, if you listen to Pep last night, he spoke about various different finals where there's key moments. And even in the game last night, if Marquinhos' header goes in, if the handball is given, of course, look, it's not a handball, but those moments matter, that, you know, they can flip a tie on its head. And, you know, they're now in the final. If they go on and they win it, it has to be regarded. I think there's just that kind of love affair with Kompany, Silva, Aguero, Yaya Toure, you know, those players who were there for so many years, who, you know, started off there. Trophy hall of winning all the Premier Leagues and FA Cups, etc. But if this team go and win the Champions League alongside the Premier League, then it has to be regarded as the best Manchester City team of all time.
The one caveat to all this is that we're at the 5th of May now, and the final isn't until the 29th. If you remember back to the Liverpool Spurs game, both teams played really badly because I think they weren't match fit anymore. They kind of that level of sharpness that we saw from them in the semi-finals in particular, that had kind of faded a little bit. It's very hard to keep at that absolute lung-busting and sharpness for such a period of time. So that's the one issue that you would just be a little bit concerned about City, where they're so far ahead against whoever comes through in the other semi that actually that will be neutralised and it becomes very much a 50-50 one-off final.
Oh, definitely. I remember the Champions League final, Madrid, obviously, with Liverpool. Liverpool did have a game plan, though. They wanted Spurs to have the ball and kind of frustrate them and catch them on the counter-attack. Of course, Liverpool scoring early gave them something to hold on to, especially after losing to Madrid the year before. But I just think with Pep's squad of players that they can just rotate and he can keep everyone happy. And I think the level he as a manager is at, that he'll, you know, he'll have them relaxed, he'll have them focused, he'll have them ready, that I still expect, you know, City, whoever they play, will come out and play this football. Like, I don't expect them to play a performance like they did last night. I think if they got ahead in the final, then they would shut up shop. But we hope, whether it be Chelsea or Madrid, Chelsea, of course, look, are still out for top four. Anything, I suppose, could happen if they went on a bad run of form. Real Madrid are battling out for La Liga, which is, you know, very exciting, with Barca playing Atletico this weekend. So they kind of, like, it's very hard to say which way, because we don't know how the result will go tonight, but you'd still expect some bit of quality. You've got to be hopeful. That's what I'd be hoping anyway.
And look, I've just checked the fixtures there. I think the Premier League runs for a week longer this year anyway, so there is at least an extra match for them to keep that match fitness.
But still, you're right in what you're saying, because, like, you even looked at it last night. You know, one City scored a second goal. Like, Zinchenko was on a yellow card. Bernardo Silva was on a yellow card. You're kind of like, get them off. And of course, it's going to be in the players' minds. Like, maybe, like I said, Real Madrid might be the only team who won't be too focused about it. But, like, players will not want to get injured, because they know this is the biggest opportunity they're going to have of winning the Champions League. So, like, the way they train might be a bit different, in the sense of, like, you know, if they're... the level they're at, like, in terms of their, you know, how hard they're working, fellas will tone it down a little bit, because they'll be half cautious of, you know, picking up a knock, picking up an injury, even in games, stuff like that. It will be interesting to see how it unfolds, but I still expect Pep to get them ready, obviously.
Saturday at 5:30, Manchester City against Chelsea in the Premier League will be a very, very interesting fixture if Chelsea get through here. I mean, if I'm Guardiola, I'm picking my full team and I'm going out and I'm crushing them and I'm saying, that's what it's going to be like in 3 weeks' time, lads.
But you know, look, Pep is in a very comfortable position in the Premier League, because they're going to win it eventually. It's just how soon they want to win it. Now, he could go and put a marker down, and obviously, like you said, play the exact same 11, but he'll be also conscious, like, maybe not, because, like, maybe give the, you know, rotate the squad, keep doing what he's been doing. Like, we've seen that in the past. As frustrating as it is to watch, I think he'll rotate his squad again. He'll keep changing. He'll bring, you know, probably Sterling will start. Rodri will come straight back in. Cancelo will come in. He'll probably play Cancelo, and Mendy will play. Do you know what I mean? He'll make, you know, tweaks. But he'll also be looking at it in the case of, I need to get the rest of the squad up to full speed, so that I have a full, you know, 22, 23 players to choose from. At the moment, you kind of, you know, this is kind of his tried and tested team, but you never know, over the next coming weeks, somebody could put their hand up and put in, you know, some serious performances. He'll be obviously conscious that, look, he's been in this situation. I know it's been 10 years since he's been there, but he's been there before.
The OTB Podcast Network.